Hi, I'm Destiny. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is August 29th of 2000. And I have a sponsor and a home group. And thank you so much for asking me to speak. It's definitely an honor to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll just tell you in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And, you know, I grew up in Washington, D.C. Excuse me. I was adopted pretty much at birth. And, you know, I have two amazing parents. They're so loving, you know. And you know, I grew up really not wanting for anything. You know, they gave me everything I needed and a lot of what I wanted, you know. And I just remember from a very early age just kind of not feeling right. And I mean, I couldn't have said it at the time growing up, but, I mean, I was full of fear, you know, and it came out in different ways. You know, when I was little, I was really hyper. I was loud. I was the kid who hit your kid, and I got in trouble all the time. You know, in nursery school, I'd get sent home all the time because I would hit someone or scratch someone, and it became, you know, very clear at an early age, you know, that there was something wrong with me. You know, my parents saw that, and they started sending me to specialists. I had a lot of testing done. I remember the tests. I remember the ink blots and different things like that. I remember that periodically growing up. And I had, like I said, I had a lot of fears, and I was in therapy for a lot of my fears at a very early age, you know, and I just kind of felt maladjusted to life. I would go to school, and, you know, I always felt kind of like I was on the outside looking in. You know, I wanted so desperately to be liked and accepted, and I just felt like I just couldn't quite get there, you know. And from a very early age, I didn't like school. You know, I mean, I got sent home a lot. I later on met my adopted mom and my adopted dad, and there's definitely alcoholism in my family. But, you know, my parents were normal. You know, I mean, just normal, good, hardworking people. And I remember, I think I was around maybe 8, 9, or 10. I can't remember exactly, but, you know, I don't know what, you know, how I got the idea to do this. You know, it was certainly not something I grew up with. You know, I knew alcohol was for adults. Adults drank alcohol. You know, my parents drank. You know, they would drink wine and whatever, but, I mean, I never saw them drunk or anything like that, but I just remember, you know, I felt so uncomfortable on the inside and so full of fear all the time. And one day I just decided, you know, it was just a day after school and my parents weren't home yet. And I felt uncomfortable and I felt anxious on the inside. And I went into my parents' pantry, into their liquor cabinet, and I took a shot of liquor, you know. And I remember, you know, drinking it down, and it burned when I went down, and I could feel it go down into my stomach, and it kind of exploded, you know, and it felt warm, and I felt better, you know. I didn't feel afraid anymore, and I would do that periodically, you know. Whenever I felt afraid or anxious, you know, I would go, and I would take a shot of liquor, you know, and, you know, I don't know why my parents would think that their 9-year-old daughter was taking shots of liquor because she felt anxious, but I would, you know, I knew I wasn't supposed to be doing that, you know, and so I would, like, clean out the shot glass, and I'd hide it in the back, like my parents would ever think to, you know, that their daughter was drinking, you know, but that's what I did, and I didn't get drunk for the first time until I was 16 years old, you know, but before that, probably around fifth grade, I think I was 11 years old, you know, before that, I was full of fear, but I was very outgoing and loud and in your face, and something happened in fifth grade, I don't know what, but I totally, you know, I think it was just self-centeredness. I thought about myself all the time. I remember thinking about myself all the time, you know, And but something changed, something shifted in the fifth grade, and I went from being really extroverted to being really introverted and just painfully shy, painfully uncomfortable, painfully aware that I was not in the popular crowd and wanted so desperately to be in the popular crowd. And I started to, you know, feel suicidal and feel depressed and, you know, and I started, you know, to do self-destructive things. I started, you know, cutting myself and counting out pills. How many, you know, how many pills would it take, you know, for me to go to sleep and never wake up again? And I mean, I'm guessing that, you know, my classmates were not thinking that way, you know, but that's how I thought. And, you know, and it was a really dark time in my life, you know, and my parents didn't know what to do with me. You know, they saw their daughter who was falling apart, who, you know, slept all the time, didn't want to do anything, hated school, hated her life, you know, and they didn't know what to do. And shortly thereafter, you know, the school actually had to intervene and basically tell my parents, this girl needs help, you know, and they were, you know, a little bit in denial. You know, they didn't want to believe that, you know, there was something wrong with their daughter. And I ended up, you know, starting to see, you know, a number of therapists. I saw a therapist and a psychiatrist, and I got diagnosed with, you know, a number of different, you know, things and was put on a whole bunch of medication. And I thought, you know, okay, this is what's wrong with me. You know, I have depression. I have borderline personality disorder. You know, I'm ADD. You know, I have these learning disabilities. Okay, this is what's wrong with me. And, you know, and I believe, you know, that I was someone who was born seeking, you know, seeking an answer, you know, to what I didn't know. But I was definitely seeking. I knew there was something wrong with me, and I didn't know what it was. And I kind of grabbed onto that whole depression thing. I was like, okay, you know, the school's saying it, my friends are saying it, now my parents are saying it, you know, doctors and therapists are saying it, this must be what's wrong with me. And you know, I took that medication, and it didn't fix me. You know, it didn't fix what was wrong on the inside. You know, I had this hole, you know, and it didn't fix it. You know, and I just continued to kind of live miserably and in a dark place for a few more years until I found drinking. And, you know, and when I was 16, I went over to one of my really good friends' houses, and it was just kind of another Friday night, and there was, you know, a bunch of my friends there, and someone had gotten alcohol, and you know, I got my own bottle, my own bottle of St. Ives Special Brew, and, you know, I tasted it. It tasted like fruit juice to me, like fruit punch, and I drank the whole bottle, and something changed. I mean, it was, you know, everything changed. You know, that fearful, you know, person who couldn't talk to you, who didn't feel pretty, who didn't feel good enough. I felt all those things. You know, I felt like I was the life of the party. You know, and I had a great night. Nothing bad happened. You know, it was fun. I laughed a lot. I could talk to people. I could flirt with boys. You know, just everything that I couldn't be, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you know. And it was amazing. And I remember thinking to myself, I love this, you know. And you know, I certainly did not start drinking every day. You know, I would drink whenever I had the opportunity, and I would, you know, do other substances whenever I had the opportunity. You know, I really wanted anything that would change the way I felt, you know, because I couldn't stand the way I felt. And around that time, I met my birth mother for the first time, and you know, she came down to visit. I think it was like in May or something like that. You know, and I'd always had this idea in my mind, like what my birth mother would be like, you know, because I felt so different. I looked at my parents and I couldn't see myself. You know, they were normal. They were well adjusted to life. You know, they were successful in their own right and good people. And I couldn't see myself in them. And I thought, you know, maybe if I could meet, you know, my birth mother and I could figure out where I came from, then I could figure out what's wrong with me, you know. And I kind of held on to that for a long time. And I met her, and she was, young and cool, and, you know, she smoked pot, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm in heaven. Like, I felt like I'd arrived. Like, I had this cool, you know, Daisy Duke wearing, midriff wearing mom, you know, who smoked pot, and I took her to, like, all the parties, you know, and she would, like, get my friends high, and we'd be drinking, and I was like, this is great, you know, and when I was 18, I ended up moving to Vermont to live with her. You know, I thought, you know, I'm going to go here, I'm going to live with her, I'm going to, you know, figure out what's wrong with me, and my life is going to be great, and, you know, and up until that point, I still, you know, was, you know, drinking on the weekends, you know, doing other things on the weekends. I would skip school a lot. I rarely went to school. There would be weeks where I wouldn't go to school, you know, and I would just go do what I needed to do because I needed something inside my body to change the way I felt, you know, because it was unbearable in my skin. And, you know, and you know, something that I've seen throughout my entire life is, you know, I switched schools every 3 years, you know. I continually tried to change my outside circumstances, thinking that things would be different. You know, I'll go to this school. Nobody will know me. It's a fresh start. I can be whoever I want to be. You know, things will be different. And I have done that my whole life with everything. You know, I'm a great starter. I'm a terrible finisher. You know, I would start things and always think, you know, things are going to be different. You know, sports, activities, whatever it was. You know, I went to church. I sang in the choir. I was active in the youth group. I thought, you know, maybe I'll do this and you know, I can get what these people have because these people seem happy. They seem to get something out of, you know, sitting in church and listening to the preacher. And, you know, and I did that for years. And I just could never seem to get what they had, you know. And so once again, I thought, I'll move to Vermont. Things will be different. Nobody will know me. It'll be a fresh start. You know, I'll get to live with my mom and learn about who I am and where I came from. And so I did that, and I moved there for my senior year of high school. And really, that's where my drinking took off, you know, because I was now in an environment where it was perfectly acceptable to sit in the living room and smoke pot all day and get drunk. And that is exactly what I did. You know, I mean, I did the same thing. I went to school when I felt like it, which was not very often, you know, and I only had class until 11, you know, and I most days couldn't even make it to that, you know, and I just would rather, you know, be getting drunk, you know, and because I couldn't stand the way I felt in my skin. And, you know, I made a few friends, you know, in my senior year, and I would hang out with them, but they really weren't doing what I was doing, you know. And a couple months after I moved there, you know, I met a guy, and, you know, we were instantly, I met a guy at a drinking party. I was drunk. He was drunk, you know, and we were instantly in a relationship, and he drank like I drank, you know, and pretty soon, the few friends that I had made, I completely dropped, you know, and that's kind of how it was for the next few years. You know, if you didn't have what I wanted, and if you didn't do what I did, I had no use for you, you know, and that's kind of how I lived, and I just, you know, kind of spent all my time with him, and we just drank and got high, and that's what we did. And you know, and I graduated high school, and I got into the University of Vermont, and I once again thought, you know, I'm going to go to college. Things are going to be different. You know, I'm going to go to class. I'm going to do well. I'm going to, I don't know, you know, join the sorority or do something like that. You know, have the college experience. You know, live in the dorms, all that stuff. And I got there, you know, and I thought to myself, I'm not going to drink. You know, I'm not going to do drugs. It's going to be different. And I got there, and I think I lasted maybe a week, you know, and I was going so insane. I couldn't leave my dorm room. I was so full of fear. I couldn't talk to people. And I quickly found the people who were doing what I was doing, and I just kind of eased right back on it in, you know. And partway through that semester, I didn't have a roommate for the first part of the semester, and partway through the semester, this girl moved in to my dorm room, and, you know, she was this hippie chick. She had long blonde dreads down to her butt, and she moved into the dorm room, and then her boyfriend moved from California with his two dogs, and they all lived in our dorm room, and my boyfriend would come, and it was like craziness. It was like inordinate amounts of drugs and alcohol were in my room at all times, you know, and I loved it. I was like, this is great, you know, and I would show up to class somewhat. I was still able to do that, you know, but I was, from the moment I woke up until the moment I went to bed, you know, I had something in my body to change the way I felt, you know, and I was able to do that for that semester. And also toward the end of the semester, you know, I was, even though I had, you know, this roommate and I had like this one other girl that I hung out with and this one guy, I was so unbearably lonely, you know, painfully lonely. And I felt so alone all the time. And the relationship with my boyfriend had started to become violent, you know, on both ends. You know, I would try and strangle him and he would throw me against a wall, you know, and, you know, I really relate, you know, to what it talks about in the doctor's opinion. You know, it's like where the drink, you know, I could no longer differentiate the true from the false. My drinking life seemed like the only normal one, you know, and that is certainly what I had become was not how I was raised. You know, it was not, it just wasn't, you know, but it had become normal to me, you know, and I thought, you know, all right, getting knocked around is just the price I pay to get what I need, you know, and that's really how I felt. I didn't care. You know, I needed to drink. And you know, and I made it through that semester, and I went back for my second semester, and my roommate didn't come back for that semester, so I was alone again. And the other girl who was living right in the room right next to me didn't come back either, and I had no one, you know, and I became to the point where I was unable to function anymore. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't go to class. I wasn't showering. I couldn't do anything, and I started to kind of slowly go insane, you know, and I started, you know, making doctor's appointments at the school doctor, and I would go in and I would just have hysterical breakdowns in front of these doctors, like, please help me, there's something wrong with me, I don't know what's wrong with me, and they would look at me and they would say, you know, there's definitely something wrong with you, but we can't help you, you know, and I just felt more and more defeated, like, you know, am I ever going to find the answer to what's wrong with me? And somewhere in that time, I think it was a night where I couldn't get any drugs and I couldn't get any alcohol and I was going crazy in my skin. Felt like my skin was crawling and I couldn't take it, and I ended up taking a pair of scissors and slicing my wrists. And I wasn't trying to kill myself. I just couldn't bear the way I felt. I needed to feel something other than what I was feeling on the inside. And honestly, I don't remember a whole lot about it. You know, I don't know if I blocked it out or whatever, but I do remember cutting myself, and I remember one of my sweet mates finding me and cleaning me up, and she ended up telling the RA, and the school intervened, and I had to go through all this red tape of, like, talking to all these different people, and, you know, and I just thought, it's not a big deal, you know. I just didn't like the way I was feeling, you know, I mean, that's really what I thought. I was like, I wasn't trying to kill myself, you know, but they saw it as being a huge deal, and so I had to be able to stay at school, I had to see a psychiatrist and see a counselor. So there I was again, back in, you know, the psychiatrist's office and back seeing a counselor. And for whatever reason, you know, I was very honest with the psychiatrist. I felt like, what do I have to lose at this point, you know? And I told her what was going on. I told her that I was drinking all the time and I was getting high every day from the time I woke up to the time I went to bed. And, you know, and she said, you know, she said to me, she's like, you have depression, you have borderline, all the same diagnoses I'd had before, and, you know, and she's like, I think your drinking and your drug use is just a coping mechanism for your depression. And I was like, okay, yeah, all right, we'll go with that. You know, and she said to me, she's like, oh, you know, I think maybe you should maybe not do that every day because those things are depressants. And I looked at her and I said, that's not going to happen. I was like, I will be doing this every day, you know, and so I don't know. But nothing got better. Things just kept getting worse, and I ended up having to withdraw from school, and I got like a medical withdrawal, and I thought to myself, you know, I think I just, you know, went to college too soon. I wasn't ready. You know, I think maybe I just need to work and relax and not have the pressure of classes and exams and all that stuff. And so I moved back in with my mom, and I got a job waiting tables, and I started waiting tables, and I would work 60, 70 hours a week, and you know, I'd be up at 5 in the morning, excuse me, and working until 4 in the afternoon, 5 in the afternoon, and then, you know, and then doing the nighttime conferences, and you know, while I was at work, I couldn't drink, you know, I couldn't, so I would take pills. You know, because I had to have something in my body. So I would take pills while I was at work, and then I would, you know, smoke a bowl on the way home and then get drunk, you know. And I did that every day for about 6 months. And, you know, and things, you know, with my boyfriend were progressively getting worse and more violent and just not good. But I had nobody else. You know, I really had nobody else at that point. And my mom, you know, started to kind of get really worried. You know, I mean, she did a lot of the same things that I did, but she could get up in the morning and go to work, you know, and she could talk to people, and she had, you know, some semblance of a normal life. You know, I could not function whatsoever, and she just had enough. I mean, she had tried everything. In high school, she'd written this long list of things that I had to do, and she made me sign it like a contract, like things like I couldn't take naps and I had to eat salad. I mean, she was, like, desperate. Like, she could see that there was something terribly wrong with me, but she didn't know how to fix it, you know, and she just gotten to the point where she was done with me, and she kicked me out. And I was homeless for a time right up until I got sober. And, you know, I lived out of my car, and I lived from place to place, wherever anyone would let me spend the night. And I slept in an abandoned house for a little while, and I would sleep, you know, on coworkers' couches. And, I mean, just wherever someone would let me sleep, you know, and I didn't, you know, the whole time that was happening, I didn't think that I was homeless, you know, and I didn't think that my life was in the state that it was in, you know, but, you know, the fact was I had no home, you know, and sometimes during the day when I had the day off, I would break into my mom's house, and I would drink and get high until she was coming home for work, and then I would leave like I had never been there, and I did that for a while, too, And I did that for a few months, and one day my parents in D.C. called me, and they were like, "What are you doing with your life?" You know, and I had no answer for them, and I panicked, and so I agreed to move back home, and I moved back home, and I think that was in July, yeah, it was in July, and about a month earlier, my brother who maybe one of us, I don't know, he's currently drinking, but was sober for a time, in Alcoholics Anonymous, but he had been, you know, kind of doing the same thing that I was doing, except he was living with my parents, so they saw it, and he ended up getting, you know, taken away in the middle of the night by two big men, to this, school in the woods, so he was there, and when I came home, we went to visit him, and I remember going to visit him, and there was something different about him, you know, and I couldn't put my finger on what it was, but there was something about him that was different, and we chatted a little bit, and I thought, you know, maybe this is what I need, you know, maybe I need to go somewhere where I can figure out what's wrong with me, and then I can get on with the rest of my life. You know, never once in my drinking did I really ever think I had a problem. You know, to me it was a solution, you know, to the way I felt on the inside. And, you know, I really always just thought I suffered from depression. And, but, you know, I went to visit him, and I thought, you know, maybe I need to do something like this. And actually before that, you know, I thought I'll go back to college, you know, and this time I'm going to go someplace warm, you know, because Vermont was really cold. You know, it was not fun trudging to class in a blizzard, you know, and I thought, you know, maybe that's why it was so hard for me to go to class. So I'll go somewhere warm, you know. So I applied to the University of Arizona, and I got in there, and I went, I flew out for, I think it was like 3 or 4 days with my parents to go to orientation. And I got there, and I had no drugs, and I had no alcohol, and I got really sick. And I was shaking, and I was nauseous, and I was throwing up. And I could barely move or function, and I had to go to all these, like, you know, orientation fun, and I was in hell. And you know, and I left there, and I thought, you know, Arizona is not the place for me. You know, this is not going to work. And I had no idea that I was detoxing. I thought that, you know, my antidepressant and my birth control were not agreeing with my stomach. I mean, that was the state I was in, the state of delusion I lived in. And then I went to visit my brother, and you know, I kind of talked to my parents about it, and very shortly thereafter, you know, I was on a train going cross country to Idaho, you know, to this program for troubled women. You know, I never went to a rehab or a detox. I didn't think that was my problem. You know, I really believed that depression was my problem, so I went to this program for troubled women, you know, and I was on the train for 3 days, miserable, you know, detoxing, and I got to this place, and, you know, and honestly, I didn't get a lot out of the actual program for troubled women, but, you know, one thing that they did do is they would take us to AA meetings, and I remember going to my first meeting. I had been to a couple meetings, a few years earlier, you know, to support my boyfriend who had gotten a DWI, you know, and I was being the good girlfriend going to support him. And but I remember going to that first meeting, and I don't exactly remember, you know, what people said, but I remember that I related to how people felt, you know, and I had never found that before in my life. I had searched for that my whole life, for someone who understood how I felt on the inside. And I'd never found it until I sat in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I left that meeting that night thinking, you know, maybe just maybe, you know, maybe just maybe this is what I have, you know. And I, you know, I started to go to meetings. You know, I would go once a week and then twice a week, and then I was going every day, and then I was going twice a day, and I was hanging out with sober people in between the noon and the night meeting. And you know, and I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and honestly, sitting in the meetings, I felt like people were speaking another language. I didn't understand. I didn't know what a home group was. I didn't know what the big book was or a sponsor. I didn't know how you got a sponsor. You know, I didn't know anything, but I knew that when I sat in those meetings, I related to how people felt, and when I left that meeting, I felt a little bit better than I did when I got there, you know, you know, and the first 3 months of my sobriety are really hazy. It actually took me 3 months to figure out what my sobriety date was. I mean, I was in such a fog, you know, when I first got sober, and I just had no idea what was going on, and I didn't know that I was detoxing. I just knew that by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was shaking, and I was crying, and I felt like I was going to jump out of my skin, you know, and I didn't know why. And, you know, and I didn't get a sponsor until I had 3 months, and I certainly don't suggest that, but that's my experience. And, you know, but there was a woman who one of the house moms in the program I was in, and she was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she'd been sober for 4.5 years, and she basically 12-stepped me. You know, she sat with me, and she shared her experience with me. And she listened to me, you know, and she read to me out of the book. And I didn't know at the time that she was literally spoon-feeding me AA, you know, and I'm so grateful for her. You know, she really helped me, you know, in those first 3 months. And, you know, and I did eventually get a sponsor. Someone brought me to my sponsor and said, you are going to ask this woman to be your sponsor. Because I was terrified. I mean, I was terrified to talk to people. I was terrified, you know, I thought that that you could only sponsor one person at a time. So if someone had a sponsor, I was like, well, I can't ask them. You know, I just had no idea, you know, but I knew that I felt safe in those meetings. And, you know, and after I got my sponsor, I put myself in her back pocket. You know, I did what she did. I went where she went. I went over to her house once or twice a week, and we went through the big book, you know, and I would smoke cigarettes and drink tea, you know, and I started to, you know, hang out with people more. And, you know, I would, like I said, I would go to the noon meeting, and I would hang out and have lunch, and then I would go to the night meeting, and then I would go to the diner, and, you know, hang out and talk and eat pie, and it was great. And after about 6 months, I decided to move back to D.C., you know, and I moved back, and I took the train home, and the train was 3 days, and then I think I was home for 2 days. And in that time, I did not go to a meeting, and I did not talk to my sponsor. And I found myself sitting on my front porch with my mom's assistant, who was drunk, drinking a glass of wine, telling her how I wasn't an alcoholic, I was just an addict, and I could drink if I wanted to. And it was that quick, you know. And I was literally seconds and inches, and I had no idea. And through a series of circumstances, which, you know, I believe is without question a higher power, you know, my mom met someone. To this day, I still don't know who that person is, but they knew about the home group I'm a member of today, and they gave this guy Jake my number. And I called Jake, and Jake had just left, and he was drinking. But Jake called this other guy, Kevin, who called my now sponsor, Bridget. And Bridget called me and picked me up for my first meeting. And thank God, you know, because who knows where I would be if that didn't happen, you know. And, I mean, there's no question that there is a God in my life, you know. And she picked me up for my first meeting, and I remember I got in the car with her, and the first thing I said is, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm just an addict. And she said, get in the car, we're going to the meeting, you know. And, you know, and I went to that first meeting. I think it was a Friday night, and I walked in, and, you know, there was probably 75 people there, and they were young, and they looked happy, and they were, like, well-dressed, and I couldn't believe it, you know. And I'm so grateful for where I got sober, because it was exactly what I needed at the time. You know, it was people with a lot of time sober, with, you know, amazing programs, and but there weren't a lot of young people. And and I know that I can stay sober anywhere having those experiences, you know, but to see, you know, all these young people who were sober and happy, I couldn't believe it, you know. And it kind of reaffirmed that feeling, like, maybe, just maybe, I can do this, you know. And, you know, I got swept up. You know, I was surrounded. People were asking me, what's your name? How long have you been sober? Can I get your number? What are your plans? You know, and I couldn't believe it. It was amazing. And I think 2 days later, I was skiing. You know, I was skiing with a couple people. And, I mean, I just really got swept up. And I was going to the young people's conferences and doing all that stuff. It was, you know, and then beach season was, like, right around the corner, and it was just amazing. And I really did get swept up in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at about 7 months sober, you know, I met a guy, and we started dating. And, you know, and honestly, I really just hid in my relationship. You know, I got sober, and I liked being sober, but honestly, I really did not have much of an interest in the program of recovery. You know, it wasn't that interesting to me. The fellowship was fun, you know, the fun things that we did, the beach, you know, dances, you know, ski trips, all that stuff was fun, but I really was not all that interested in the program of recovery. Really, I was interested in getting the outside things that I thought would make me happy. you know, and I could not have said that to you at the time, you know, but my actions without question showed that. And I got into this relationship and I didn't feel the need to, you know, make friends and be of service. And, you know, I would be of service sometimes if, you know, if it was convenient for me, you know, but if it wasn't, I wouldn't do it. And I lived that way for a very long time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, at 9 months, I did do a fourth and fifth step. And, you know, I honestly, I was as searching and fearless as I could have been. But I really didn't see much, is the truth, you know. But, you know, I was really just interested in getting those outside things. I thought that if I could, you know, meet the man and get married and have that white picket fence life and be the soccer mom, you know, and have children, that I would be happy, that it would fix what was wrong with me on the inside. And I, you know, pursued that. And I got most all of those things. I had, you know, the boyfriend who proposed, and I was engaged, I was going to get married, you know, and we had a condo, and I was in school, I was going to graduate soon, and, you know, and I had all these ducks in a row, and I thought I knew how my life was going to turn out, you know, and I've had different periods in my sobriety where things have happened where I've been in such amounts of pain that I've been willing to do something different, and a little bit of change has occurred, you know, and that was one of those instances where I found myself engaged, living in this really nice condo in Reston, you know, going to school, you know, all the outside things I could ever want, and I was miserable. I was miserable. I hated my life. I felt suicidal again. You know, I couldn't function again, you know, and I thought, how did I get here, you know, And I started to talk to my sponsor, and I started to take an honest look at myself and how I was living and what I was doing, you know, and it was over a few month period where I took these inventories and I brought them to my sponsor, and I got some perspective, and then I took another inventory and brought it to my sponsor and got some perspective, you know, and I started to do a little bit more, you know, I started to do some more service, I started to sponsor people, you know, I started, you know, to read the big book and to try to meditate, you know, and I saw that what I was doing wasn't what I should be doing, you know, and I ended up leaving that relationship and actually, instead of continuing to do the things in Alcoholics Anonymous, I went completely crazy and ran to, again, to outside things to make me feel better. And I did that, you know, for another 2 years, and I got into another relationship, and with a guy who I thought I was going to marry, you know, and we moved in together, and I started to build that life again, but this time, I got so far off the beam that, again, I was seconds and inches from a drink, and I had no idea. You know, I would have flashes during that time. This is about almost 2 years ago. I would have flashes where I'd be sitting on my bed, and I would think, I have nothing on the inside. I have nothing, you know. And then I would think, but I have a boyfriend, so we'll just see what happens, you know. I mean, it was really scary, and I was skipping meetings, and I wasn't calling people. I would look through my phone on my way home from work, and I would think, there's nobody for me to call, you know. And I would go home, and I would isolate in my room and feel miserable. And those feelings came back again, and I was, you know, really in a bad spot. And what happened was, you know, that guy broke up with me, thank God, you know, and I was in more pain than I've ever been in my entire life, drinking or sober. I was completely lost. But, you know, something, I just knew, you know, that if he were to break up with me, that I was going to have to take the actions. I just knew. Something inside me knew. And he broke up with me at 4 o'clock on a Monday. And at 6 o'clock, I was at class giving a presentation. I did not skip a beat, you know, and I was in more physical and emotional pain than I'd ever been in my life. And people carried me, you know, and because I was so far removed from my friendships, you know, and I felt so far out there. And the love and care that people showed for me brought me to my knees. I couldn't believe it, you know, and people carried me, you know. People, you know, Shay, for a month, you know, spent every night with me. I couldn't be alone. You know, I couldn't be alone at all. And I would, you know, I would wake up in the morning and I would hit my knees and I would pray and I would get up and I would go downstairs and I would read the literature. And then I would be in the car over to a friend's house, you know, and then I would pick up the new girl for the noon meeting. And then I would go to class and, you know, and then I would go over to my sponsor's house and then I would go to the meeting. And I did any and everything I could to change, you know. And I remember during that time, the seventh step was I clung to every word in the seventh step in the 12 and 12. I related to every single word of it like I was reading it for the first time, because I knew I had to choose the character building over comfort, that I could no longer run to outside things to make me feel better. The guy was not going to make me feel better. And something in me really started to change, you know, and really, in the last 11 months, I have walked through my greatest fear in life, which is being alone, you know, and it's certainly been up and down, and I have made mistakes along the way, you know, but my life today is beyond my wildest dreams, you know, and I don't have the things that I thought would make me happy, that I thought I couldn't live without, and my life today is so amazing, you know. I get to go to work every day with, you know, one of my best friends in the world. You know, we're sober together, we live together, you know, we get to teach together. I love my job, you know. I love my friendships. My friendships are, you know, deeper and greater than I could have ever possibly imagined. It's what I always wanted growing up. I just wanted to feel a part of, and I feel so a part of my life. And even just recently, you know, we've had a lot of people leave and drink, you know, people who've been sober for a while. You know, one of my pigeon sisters just recently drank, and she had almost 9 years sober, and she just decided that she wasn't an alcoholic, and it happened over the course of time, and I watched it happen, you know. And there's been some other people who've also left, and it's really made me take a look at my first step, you know. Because my first step is something that I've struggled with my entire sobriety, you know, and I've had different instances that have happened throughout my sobriety, you know, where I've been forced to look at it, you know, and I've been just recently forced to look at it again, and it actually came up. I started to go back to meditation on a consistent basis, and things started to come up, and that was one of them, And, you know, I wrote an inventory and I brought it to my sponsor. And the deal is I just have to continue doing what I'm doing. And my mind went to, well, if she's not an alcoholic, her story is way worse than mine. How could I be an alcoholic? You know, and that's what I thought. But through that, I never stopped taking the actions. You know, I've never stopped taking the actions through that. And really, I just have to come to acceptance with some parts of my story, you know, and I've been able to see that I have a very black and white view of what I think an alcoholic is and what I think that they should have done to be an alcoholic. And I don't fit into all those categories, but I know that I relate to how people feel. And I know that when I take a drink, it changes the way I feel. And that's why I drank, you know. And so that's something that I've been going through recently. But I'm so grateful for my life, you know. My life today is just so amazing. And, you know, and there's a lot of things. There's a lot of unknowns, you know. I don't know what's going to happen in my life, you know, but I know that I really enjoy my life, you know, and if I don't get the things that I thought would make me happy, I know I'll be okay, you know, and I really try to live in a way today, you know. I really believe that, you know, you know, faith is an action, you know, and my faith is shown through my actions, you know, and that's what I try and do, and that's how I try and live on a day-to-day basis, and a lot of times I fall short of that mark, you know, I'm human, and I certainly make mistakes, you know, and you know, but I'm really just trying to live differently today, and so I think that's all out of me. So thank you for letting me share.